everyone, and welcome back to the African Roots Podcast. Today is Friday, June 3rd, 2011. Remember, you can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. How's everybody doing today? I hope you're having a good week. I think the weather has settled down, I might say. I'm glad to see some of the really tragic storms that we were having a couple of weeks back, I think, have ended. Hopefully, the worst of the tornado season is behind us. And of course, Memorial Day weekend was just last weekend. And this is really the beginning of the summer season. So anyway, I hope that you all are beginning your summer in a very nice, pleasant way. There are a lot of things that are going on. This is, of course, vacation season for lots and lots of people. And I hope you're getting some of your summer projects lined up. And, of course, some of your summer travel plans also lined up. Anyway, hope also that you have enough things that are going on that you can attend. I know tomorrow is the 4th of June here in the Mid-Atlantic area. I know that different groups are also starting their summer season. The Baltimore chapter of AUGS, the Agnes King Callum chapter, is holding their annual picnic, which is tomorrow, and that's going to take place in Ouella, Maryland, which you know, many of you know, is in Baltimore County, just technically still in the town of Catonsville. It's at the Benjamin Banneker State Park, and it's always a nice event. It's an opportunity for people to get together, chat, discuss their projects, what they're doing, and have a nice time outside, and I hope the weather is going to cooperate with that. And I think someone sent me something earlier this week. I believe there's a similar event going on in Philadelphia as well. I believe that the group in Philadelphia is also having an outdoor event, so I wish them well with that also. But a lot of things are going on, and of course it's picking up steam as the weather's getting better. A lot of things are going on in terms of the sesquicentennial of the Civil War, the beginning of the Civil War. And you know, Civil War is one of my favorite topics. I have a blog devoted to the Civil War, and which is the USCT Chronicle. If you Google that, it'll take you right to my blog, which is usctchronicle.blogspot.com. But I'm talking about a number of things, and I'm really just excited to see a number of things because it's getting people involved. I know that the Arkansas Democrat Gazette is going to be devoting an article to the whole theme of Civil War, freedom. Also Juneteenth, which is June is approaching in a couple of weeks. It'll be time for that also. But someone shared with me some information, in fact, coming out of Michigan pertaining to the Civil War, that there is an exhibition in Dearborn, Michigan, called Discovering the Civil War, which is going to be at the Henry Ford Museum, which is the Greenfield Village and Henry Ford Museum. They're going to have, and this is kind of neat, and I'm surprised to hear that every few years the National Archives actually sends this original document on the road. And you know, you've heard me say in the past that I consider summer sort of a season of freedom and celebrating freedom. Well, the actual original Emancipation Proclamation, the actual document itself, is going to be on display for 3 days this month in Dearborn at the Henry Ford Museum, Greenfield Village. And so we're talking about the weekend of the 20th to the 22nd. So you'll have a chance to see the original copy that was signed by Abraham Lincoln in 1863. And admission to the exhibition is going to be free while this original document is going to be on display. I'm not sure what they normally charge for visitors to the museum, but for those of you in Michigan, great time to go and see a real piece of history. And of course, the document itself, it's only on display for a few days. They have to take a lot of precautions as they're traveling with the document because it is extremely fragile. a few years ago, the document was also released by the National Archives, and they had it on display in Los Angeles. That was in 2003, I believe. So it is kind of a neat thing that they are taking some of these precious documents. And I can imagine just trying to travel with something. One has to make sure that at all times the document is under climate control conditions. And it's just, there's just an awful lot that's going on. One thing I noticed with that announcement, that the museum, the Henry Ford Museum, is also inviting U.S. Colored Troop reenactment groups to participate during the display. And I don't know how many there may be in Michigan, or I'll just say in the Midwest in general, perhaps, who may want to come and participate in a vigil or in an encampment, and to possibly act as an honor guard to during that time that this rare document is going to be on display. So it's just really kind of a neat thing. Coming up at NARA, the National Archives and Records Administration in Morrow, Georgia, for those of you in the greater Atlanta area, there's an opportunity to hear a lecture. It's going to be sponsored by the Friends of the Georgia Archives and History, and it's a lunch with Dr. Timothy Erickson from the University of Wisconsin. He's going to be talking about a little-known community that existed once upon a time in the Midwest in Wisconsin. And this is an African-American community, no longer in existence. It's called the Prescott Project. And apparently, this was a black community that thrived in the years after the Civil War. We're talking the 1870s and the 1880s. And believe it or not, this was one of the largest African-American communities in Wisconsin during the time it existed. But like many settlements, it had a short life, and by 1900, it was gone. And that's kind of a wonderful thing to I think sit in and listen to these stories. It's wonderful to hear the stories about some communities that we don't know anything about anymore. These individuals are someone's ancestors who lived there, and the fact that there was this thriving community that was actually established before the Civil War, and at the same time, here it's gone. I'll bet most people in Wisconsin don't know this history. And anyway, Dr. Erickson is going to be there at the State Archives at the NARA facility, rather. The State Archives, or the Friends of the Archives, are presenting him. But I think it's just really kind of a neat story, a little-known black history fact for sure. But these are the kinds of pieces of history that I think that reflect how widely scattered our communities were. People had courage to venture in. You know, I can remember growing up hearing people saying, oh, I'm not going to that town. We're not welcome there. Or there was a certain degree of fear in terms of venturing into communities that were unknown. Imagine our ancestors stepping out of the confinements of being enslaved and going to a brand new community on the frontier. And at that point in time, we're still talking many places in the Midwest were part of the frontier. Rural Wisconsin, a thriving African-American community. Little known story. And if you happen to be in Morrow, Georgia, you may want to go and listen to this presentation. As I understand, the presentation is free, and it's from 12 to 1, and it's going to take place on the 9th of June. So, again, you know, I'm always amazed at how many stories that are out there to be told, and one of the things that's always my personal theme to talk about is the need for us to tell our own stories, because so many times we may feel that, it's just only of interest to us or to a handful of us. You'd be surprised how many other people can learn and grow from you telling stories as well, that you may assume that, you know, there is no interest. So I'm excited to see something like that. One of the things that, as you know, I also blog, and I had a very good response to one of the posts on my blog, on one of my blogs, I have several, the African Native American blog, and I talked about the fact that there are so many landmarks that are missing, and African-American landmarks in what is now the state of Oklahoma. And I pointed out that there were a number of schools, even cemeteries, churches, old academies that are non-existent. Some were also colleges, two-year colleges, and most don't exist anymore. And it's something that I have a very strong feeling about, particularly coming from a family that has part of its background in what is now Oklahoma and Indian Territory. It is amazing that one aspect of Oklahoma's history is missing, and that is the story of slavery that took place in the territory. And I guess for me, it's very, very important to tell the whole story of, and not any group of people, any community. All communities have rich histories. All communities have incredible stories, particularly from the day people gathered and decided, we're going to settle here. We're going to make this place our home. Some of us, we know in our own historical background, many of us had no choice in terms of selecting the homes where our ancestors were because they were brought there. But the moment that the confinements of slavery ended, they did have a certain degree of choice. Some chose to remain where they were because it's the only place they knew as home. Some chose to move on. But there are stories that are there, and there are also those opportunities now for us to make sure that we preserve not only the stories, but we preserve whatever landmarks there may be. Well, that brings me to another event that is coming up, and that particular event is a preservation conference that's taking place, and it's going to take place in Oklahoma later this month. And I'm really excited to know about this, not necessarily because of what they have on the program. I'm hoping it's an opportunity actually for us to start to consider participating in it. I'm referring to the statewide preservation conference in Guymon, Oklahoma. That's going to take place rather next weekend, June the 8th through the 10th. And they're going to have three concurrent tracks of sessions. One is preservation in the wide open spaces, which is really going to talk about the archaeological and historic resources of the Great Plains. And Western Oklahoma, one can consider certainly Great Plains. And yes, there is African American history in the western part of the state as well. Track B is considering old is the new green, which is addressing how rehabilitation of old landmarks is good for the environment and how new technology can be used in preservation projects. And then the third track is local preservation environment, focusing on the development of community preservation programs. Well, this is something that I think that we as African Americans certainly need to think about our own communities. And at least I'm happy to see it in one of the states that my ancestors are from. But beyond that, there are things that I can apply to the other states. I research multiple states, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Mississippi, Tennessee. And although this is an Oklahoma preservation conference, just looking at the kinds of things that are being suggested and are being presented at this conference has me thinking about the fact that we need to be thinking preservation as well. One of the projects that I learned about, I did talk about in one of my earlier blogs this year, was an archaeological project that's taking place in southern Oklahoma. And what a surprise it is, also because I also got someone who responded to me who was involved in the project. There is a dig underway to explore and hopefully find the home site of Robert Jones. And many who research Indian Territory history may know that Robert Jones was a prominent slaveholder in the Choctaw Nation. In fact, he was one of the largest slaveholders in the Choctaw Nation. At one point, he had close to 500 slaves. Most of the slaveholders in Choctaw country, as well as in Chickasaw country, did not have that type of traditional plantation style property holdings, and Robert Jones did. What surprised me, I guess earlier in the 20th century, and I don't know what year that may have been, the original homestead where he lived was destroyed, I guess, due to fire. So it was something that, you know, was a situation, I guess, of the elements. But I found it interesting to think that this man who was so wealthy, who had such an incredible history, and who really was one of the few people that part of what is now Southern Oklahoma, his home site is being sought. And I'm thinking, what do you mean sought? Wow, this man was a man of prominence and wealth. How could it have been lost? That tells me an awful lot. It tells me a lot that even among those who were the privileged class, the wealthy class, the ruling class, even with a certain degree of neglect, even those sites can be lost. And of course, my next question is, if one finds the old home site, can one find perhaps a foundation where the slave dwellings were? If there was plantation-style culture that existed on an estate, there was a burial ground. There was a slave burial ground someplace. So it's one of those things that I hope that their effort, which has been initiated by the University of Oklahoma Archaeology Department, will start to generate those kinds of questions as well. One of the things that I have found and have come to appreciate just as a person who researches and studies history is a desire to connect with the land. And yes, this is summer. We as genealogists, we're always looking for records, but I'm also interested in the places themselves, to be able to walk upon the land, stand on the same soil where some of my ancestors stood. And it is something that I think that we need to always keep in mind. That should be our goal. If you know who your ancestors were in any particular community, can you find the place, if they were enslaved, can you find the place where they may have lived and toiled and died while enslaved? If your ancestors were freed, can you find the places where they lived freely and walk upon that same soil? Don't forget, we stand upon the shoulders of our ancestors, and we honor them by following in their footsteps even in this current time. So it's exciting for me to see that this preservation effort is underway, and to, I hope, encourage many of you also to start paying attention to what's going on preservation wise in your own state and community as well. Well, as you know, also Juneteenth is approaching. Here in Maryland, there is going to be an event the weekend of Juneteenth, the 18th of June, the Prince George's County African American Historical Genealogical Society chapter is holding their 6th annual Juneteenth conference. That event is free. It is excellent. It is open to the public. And I hope that many of you start to think and appreciate the concept of Juneteenth. A word about that. I received a call, it was not a call actually. I received an email this week from a colleague in Arkansas who had gotten an inquiry that he had shared with me from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, which many of us who grew up in Arkansas remember it as the Arkansas Gazette. Well, it's now called the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, which is the largest paper in the capital in Little Rock. And the reporter was working on a piece for Juneteenth. Arkansas has embraced Juneteenth as a state holiday, as have other states as well. And again, that brings me to just sort of the point, what is Juneteenth, sort of in general, but again, the story of freedom. Many people know the origins of Juneteenth. It's when General Granger sailed into Galveston Harbor in southern Texas, told people who were still being held in June that after the war had ended, the war had ended in April of that year, and two and a half months later, many people were still being held in bondage. And understandably, people were not going to be that eager to give up their free labor, but he let people know what was going on in terms of their status. And of course, the word spread quickly. Slaves were freed. Freedom had finally come at last. Many of us don't come necessarily from, obviously, the community in Galveston, Texas, but That's a story that's missing in many of our family narratives. Many of us have been fortunate to be able to go pretty far back in our history. Others are content to go back and at least document the family back to 1870, knowing that it's going to be a challenge to get back before that, because the census in 1860, if they were not free people, they're not going to be listed in that census. That's understood. Well, one of the things that I often encourage people is to look at the family history again with that very, very topic in mind in terms of freedom. Juneteenth freedom was announced to people still held in bondage. Well, do you know your own story in terms of what happened in your own family? How did freedom come? When did it come? This is a missing story that many people have. They get their family to 1870, but they can't tell you the story of how they learned they were free. Now, if you come from a family where individuals left diaries or journals, then you're very fortunate. If you come from a family where the oral history is there and you learn about how individuals were freed, you're fortunate in that regard as well. But many, dare I say most, don't know the circumstances in which freedom actually came. How did the word reach your particular family that you were no longer enslaved, that they were no longer enslaved? And I have, in fact, an entire presentation that I've devoted to this, because I think it's something that I hope that people start to ask the question. You know, many people get to 1870, and some can go further back and will say, oh yes, I found them in the estate records. This was a slave owner. I was able to learn that out. And here was the father who was listed as a slave in this particular estate record, and keep going back. But again, what's the other story that transitioned from enslavement to freedom? For me, I have found it particularly useful to learn how freedom came to the community. And a lot of times you find that there were stories of the war approaching the community, the town, the village where your family lived. Many people who were gone off to fight had joined Confederate Army, so that meant the slave master was gone, the overseers were gone, and now the slaves had opportunity to leave. Well, if this was going to happen in that community, and I encourage people, pull out those old history books and start to read those books that talk about it, and you'll start to hear about the plantations being deserted and how people were resigned to the fact that, well, there was no one was there to enforce the enslavement anymore, and people realized it, seized the moment, and freed themselves. This is a concept we don't have. A lot of us think that folks were just sitting around waiting for somebody else to come and declare that they were free. That may have been the case in Galveston, because they were truly being held continually in bondage. But in many places across the Deep South, that didn't happen. The word had spread, get to the Union line. You've heard me tell those stories. Contraband camps, you've heard me talk about them. Well, again, this is another part of the story to tell, and I'm excited to see that many places are now, and many individuals are daring to look at this part of the history. You know, I particularly embrace the concept of telling the stories of resistance, telling the stories of resilience, and excuse me, it's easy to become involved in some aspects of the history that can be so very, very difficult to face when we read the outrages that occurred immediately in the years after the Civil War, even some of the stories in the Civil War. You know, there were almost 200,000 African-American men in the Union Army. When they met the enemy, many times the enemy was so infuriated to see people whom they considered inferior pointing guns at them, that this rage continued for decades throughout the South when peace had come. Suddenly, people who were seen as stepping out of their place, many, many outrages were heaped upon them. And we know the stories of the acts of violence and domestic terror that was poured upon civilians for many, many decades, many of which lasted well into the mid-20th century. But what I find particularly empowering and very, very invigorating are the stories that come from our communities, from our families, from the old homestead, the old ancestral lands where our ancestors lived are the stories of their strength, the stories of their resilience, and pardon me, their ability to resist oppression as it approached them. And again, I find this so very, very important because it comes through preservation, as I was just talking about earlier. And you see the fact that people struggled so hard to learn. Individuals who were being trained and drilled as soldiers in the evening at the campsite, they were learning how to read. These are the stories that we must also work to preserve in our history, and they are so very, very important. As the season of preservation begins, as the summer's about to unwind for us, I hope that you all are about to really take advantage of this, the great time of the year this is. This is also a great time, I know, for travel. And I want to give a shout out to all of you who are on your way to the California Jamboree. Yes, one of the big three events is unfolding. You hear me talk about NGS, FGS, and the Jamboree. Greetings to all who are going to be out in Burbank and who are going to be enjoying themselves at the California Jamboree. It's always a great time for individuals, as I have been told. I'm going to be in preparation this time next week, getting ready to go to Sanford. I'll be leaving the following weekend. So this is an opportunity for so many of us to bring out those summer projects. Time to get busy. Time to visit those cemeteries. I'm going to talk about cemeteries a bit next time and preservation of cemeteries, as well as how to identify our Civil War ancestors in those cemeteries as well. Wow, I just checked the time. I can't believe this many minutes has passed. So I'm going to wind it down again for this week. Lots of things are going on. Have a wonderful week. Summer is here. I'm so thrilled. And the weather is getting really, really great. So get out there and time to pull those projects down and get started. Take care, everyone. Have a great week. Thank you always for listening. You know I appreciate you. Keep doing what you're doing, everybody. And you know what that is. Keep researching. Keep documenting, and always keep sharing what you find. Take care, everyone. Have a great week. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.